And now, 88.9 and 96.5 FM WDCR brings you The Cradle and the Convert. Join your hosts, Dave Slade and Mark Bartholomew, for a conversation about local issues with a Catholic perspective.
Welcome to The Cradle and the Convert. Today is July 20th, 2017, and Mark, today's our 99th show.
No way. Yeah, I thought 99. We had our 100th.
No, not yet. That's next week. We go in order. Last week was 98, this week's 90. Anyway, I'm Dave Slade, The Cradle, sitting here with
Mark Bartholomew, The Convert.
You're listening to The Cradle and the Convert on WDCR 88.9, 96.5 FM. And as I was looking, you know, today, Mark, is supposed to be the hottest day of the year.
Yeah, you started to say January, not to throw you under the bus.
Well, but, you know, in January, these are the days you dream about. Oh, just to have a hot day.
Yeah.
And, of course, in July like this, you dream about January just having a cool day.
Yeah.
But, you know, since it's going to be so hot, Mark, there's some things that I want to tell the listeners about a little bit today. And that is what to do when it's this warm. Now, most of us have air conditioning in our homes, or we have a nice fan. But, you know, people that have to work outside or aren't able to be in air conditioning all day need to think about a couple things.
Well, and particularly, Dave, what about the folks that are homebound, the elderly, for instance, or the very young?
Yeah.
You know, children.
And the people that can't complain about
That's
it,
right.
you know.
That's right.
Well, they say that when it's this hot, you should try to wear loose-fitting clothing. As you can see today, I have on my fancy Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah, I have nothing loose. It keeps shrinking. There's something going on in my closet.
Well, they say you should wear light-colored clothing. You should hydrate. And, you know, if you know it's going to be hot like today and you're going to have to be outside, you need to drink that water a day in advance. You really should drink water in advance of a hot day like this. So, and tomorrow's supposed to be scorching too. So if you know you're going to be outside, you ought to get a couple quarts of water in you the day before as well as the day of to keep you from being dehydrated.
Now, did you read this somewhere or is this a Dave Slade-ism?
No, it's true. It's true.
Now, how can that be, Dave? Because I can drink something and within 15 minutes, it's gone.
Stop right there.
Okay.
It has to
You're
do
getting
with,
the drift.
With
yeah.
getting the water in your system, and it fills the cells, and it will retain some of that water.
Uh-huh.
And you know, the more water you drink, actually the less water you retain. But you can start a day before or so in hydrating your body so that you'll have that reserve on hand that you keep replenishing during the days when you're outside when it's really hot.
Now, some of the
symptoms of that are lightheadedness, your memory gets kind of foggy. You stop sweating because you get so hot. You're really dehydrated if you stop sweating. And a lot of people end up in the hospital, in the ER, on hot days from dehydration. So I can't tell you how important it is to drink plenty of fluids during this time of year. You should also check your medications. If you're on certain antibiotics, you don't want to be out in the sun.
And I know that.
You should get that from your doctor. There are certain things that will cause an extreme sunburn, a reaction. And, of course, being outside without SPF is a bad idea.
Right.
You should have on, no matter how old you are or how suntanned you are, you need that protection on your skin, which is the largest organ in our body, to protect us from sunburn and from skin cancers, even melanoma.
Yeah.
So there are things you can do. And, you know, they talk on TV, they always repeat the same ones over and over, but think about the medication. Think about getting lots of fluids in you the day before, the day you may be out in it, the day after. I think one of the things they say is to drink half your weight in ounces of water a day to be healthy. So if you weigh 200 pounds, you should try to drink 100 ounces of water.
That means, what, I got to do 600 a day or what?
Well, if you're going to be out in the heat today, or tomorrow, let your body get used to it, get acclimated to it before you start, you know, doing whatever you're doing. If you're going out in the garden to pull weeds or whatever, you know, wander around outside a little bit, get used to it before you start working.
And, you know, unless it's something absolutely critical, and I mean objectively critical to most people, like you talk about pulling weeds, weeds are going to be there by the weekend when it's supposed to let up a little bit. You shouldn't be out. If you can avoid it. Now, I know some people work and have to do that, and others are OCD when it comes to golf, and they go out when they don't have to. But it is something that really people should be careful about.
Yeah, yeah. Because, like I said, the ER will see people that
get
dehydrated.
Well, and we know from our past experience how many folks that didn't survive in heat waves because they didn't take care.
Yeah. So, Mark, we have a couple guests on the show this morning. Why don't you tell us who we have for the first segment?
I am delighted to introduce our special guest this morning, Deacon Rob Johnson. And he's almost a local boy, not to Decatur folks, but to Central Illinois, he most certainly is. And I've asked him to come this morning and talk to us a little bit about his discernment to get into the priesthood and his seminary experience as well as what he's finding. So,
okay.
Deacon Rob, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me on.
We're glad to see you. Pleasure to meet you.
You too.
Deacon, why don't you tell us a little bit about where you are in seminary and where you're from and what your goals are. You're a transitional deacon, is that correct?
Yeah, I'll be a priest next May, God willing.
God bless you.
And born and raised in Iliopolis, so about 25 minutes from Decatur is all. My mom and dad have the grocery store there. Grew up there, big sports guy, big outdoorsman growing up. After high school, I went over to the University of Illinois in Champaign and have a biology degree from there. And I'm trying to think, after U of I, I worked 2 years for the Fellowship of Catholic University Students in Lincoln, Nebraska, and worked closely with the Newman Center out there in Lincoln. And then right after that, joined the seminary for the diocese and have been at Mundelein Seminary up by Chicago ever since. Just finished my fifth year up there. Ordained a deacon last April for the diocese, and then priest next May after one more year of school.
Well, wow. Congratulations.
That's just terrific.
Thank you.
What is your home parish in Iliopolis? Because they are in our listening area.
Oh, sure. Resurrection in Iliopolis. Yep. Used to be Visitation, and then Niantic and Buffalo all combined into one parish with Iliopolis now, maybe 10 years ago or so.
Well, we'll give them a big shout out over in Iliopolis.
Yeah. We've got their homeboy with us.
That's right.
That's right. Now, I want to ask you about classes at a seminary.
Okay.
You know, I'm sure there's a lot of history, right? And a lot of Bible, mm-hmm. a lot of learning the scriptures. But are there classes that they give you on how to baptize a baby or how to distribute communion or how to, you know, just the how-tos of the sacraments?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's later on in the formation process. So really, I've just started those, but they just call them practicum classes, and you'll take one for pretty much every sacrament. So had one last fall on baptism, for example, where you just do the practicals, you do mock baptisms, stuff like that, done mock wake services. So the seminary at Mundelein has, it'll throw you for a loop the first time you go in the sacristy there, but they have a coffin in the sacristy. But that's for the class that, you know, you take it out and you actually do a wake service or a funeral or things like that to know exactly where to move and what to do. And then, the summer programs and where you're at with the seminary, that's all very intentional on the part of them and the diocese both, that you're getting practical experience before you're thrown in as a priest. And so that's part of the reason I'm in Decatur this summer, is to have a summer as a deacon to get preaching experience and be at baptisms. And I baptized my first baby, you know, all on my own a couple months ago.
Awesome.
My best friend from college, I got to baptize his little girl. So it's a good mix of, like any field, they give you the basics, they give you a couple run-throughs, and then you just kind of go out and do it, and you have a couple years to, you know, have a pastor mentoring you and question all kinds of questions, you know, different circumstances.
I can't imagine.
Yeah. Well, you know, that leads me to kind of what I was wanting to ask about, and you probably haven't quite been there yet, but, you know, how do they train a priest to hear confession?
Yeah.
You know, because
they can't sit in on them.
Right.
You know, to get the experience.
I suppose you do mock confessions, but.
You do. Yeah. That's how Mundelein does it, at least, is your fourth year. So I'll actually take the confession practicum probably this fall, if not in the spring. And it's the same thing. They take you through kind of the nitty gritty requirements of it, of just the theology of and the importance of the seal of confession.
Yes, yes.
You know, to really kind of know your way around that very well and its importance. And then you, I think you do, it's multiple. I've actually been the confessee for deacon buddies of mine. So there'll be a veteran priest that's on the Mundelein faculty, and he'll have the deacon in with him. And at that point, you got to have the prayer of absolution, stuff like that, memorized. And he'll meet with another seminarian that's volunteered, and he'll just pull you out in the hallway at first, and he'll give you a scenario, you know, of something. I mean, they've ranged kind of wildly from what I have experienced. And he'll give you a scenario, and you just kind of role play when you go in, all the way through the penance, the absolution. And then the priest is, I mean, because it's not a real confession there, so the priest is able to sit in, and he'll just kind of take notes and give feedback, and you get probably four or five of those, and you get thrown into the mix then when you're a priest. Yep.
Well, you know, the training on the seal of the confessional would have to be one that you would have to take so seriously. I mean,
the
whole Catholic faith is built around reconciling ourselves with God so that we can receive him in the Eucharist.
Well, and we're not confessing to the priest.
Right.
He is the conduit for Jesus. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we're there bearing our souls to God.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, whether you go face-to-face or behind the screen, I've often wondered, how does the priest put that confession out of his mind the next time he sees you? But they do,
absolutely.
Still all talk to me.
Yeah. Well, most of them anyway, folks.
Who is the pastor of the parish over in Iliopolis?
It was actually for years there was a facilitator, Sister Phyllis Schenck, who was a Springfield Dominican, did a great job out there. And then Father Rafael Paul Moreno was the priest at Riverton, and he would come and fill in masses or the weekend. And then just this past July, so this month actually, Father Frederick, I can't remember his last name, but he's fairly new to the diocese. He's the chaplain at St. John's in Springfield, I believe.
Oh, okay.
And then he's in residence now in Iliopolis and going to be the pastor there. So, I mean, first time Iliopolis has had a priest in 30 years in town. You know, in town. There's been priests that have come out and done a great job,
yeah.
But
yeah.
To have a priest
living
there.
I have to tell you, Dave, the vocations for the last 3-4 years have been tremendously increased here. And we're in such dire need of more priests and religious to come forward
Well, you know, we always talk about the pendulum swings both ways, and we hit such a dry spell back in the 90s and early 2000s that now the pendulum's swinging back, and you know, God will always provide. We know that.
That's right.
But now that the pendulum is swinging back, when you look at the diocese across the country, the numbers are up. Maybe the people that are called by God are listening.
Yep, apparently so.
You know, there's probably been times when people have felt called and have ignored that call due to secularism or wanting to live a more secular life. But I think, by golly, the Lord is really knocking on the doors of men and women's hearts across the country, and the numbers are up across the country.
Well, and speaking of that, Deacon Rob, at what point did you think you wanted to be a priest?
You know, I didn't have one specific moment when I thought, okay, I gotta think about this more or anything like that. But really when I was over in Champaign was when I started to think about it. I got involved at the Newman Center. I lived at a fraternity, but I got involved at the Newman Center there. And just a couple of the priests there had a huge impact on me. They were fun, young guys. And there's just something with the commitment of it, the sacrifice in it that I thought was attractive. And then also seeing how they lived their lives, it was just, as I started to live more of a sacramental life and go to daily mass and make a regular confession, you know, my life was just so much happier and more fulfilled that it was kind of, for me, it was almost like, how can I not think about it? And then when I worked for Focus and worked in Lincoln, Nebraska, both the priests out there, they had two priests at the Newman Center, and they were just good guys. And so I would, you know, just became friends with them. And so anyway, it was kind of a slow process for me. And I was actually, I just kind of couldn't get it out of my head. And then I was on I still remember I was on a date with a girl out there, and I mean, on paper, she was the perfect girl for me. And I remember still thinking about on this date that, you know, I wanted to go or give seminary a try. And I was like, well, if I'm in, you know, sitting across from a beautiful Nebraska Catholic farm girl, and I'm still thinking about priesthood, I probably need to go and, you know, see if it's for me. So, you know, part the diocese was great. All the priests that I knew were great. And when I went to seminary, it was very much, I want to see if seminary is for me. I had no idea if I wanted to be a priest 6 years later or anything like that. And it's just a slow process. But I think the attraction is in, you know, just the radicalness of it in a lot of ways that, you know, God has to fulfill you, yeah. Or you're just toast in that life. And right. So I know a lot of my friends, especially, that's part of that initial attraction too, is the fact that it is a radical call. You know, it's not a normal call. And so it's just a lot of gratitude for it.
Yeah. Hey, Mark, let me remind everybody that you're listening to The Cradle and the Convert on WDCR 88.9 and 96.5 Decatur Catholic Radio. And we're speaking this morning with Transitional Deacon Rob Johnson from the Mundelein Seminary, who's currently assigned this summer to Holy Family here in Decatur.
And we're glad to have him.
So your experience here in town, and you can do homilies now,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And you said you did a baptism.
Yep.
So it's coming along good. Tell me about the experience here in Decatur at Holy Family so far this summer.
Oh, it's been wonderful. Being able to preach on a regular basis has been, you know, very good. Father Joe over at Holy Family has been a great, you know, become a real friend and mentor for me. And I was talking to some buddies from the seminary maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it's just great as a deacon, even, and this has been different than even as a seminarian, but as a deacon, you know, the amount of stuff that happens and just the inner workings of a parish, are especially a parish with a school like Holy Family, are they're elaborate, you know, in a lot of ways. And so you just realize how much stuff that there is to do and be on top of and everything. And so for me, overall, the experience has been great. It's been good to get to know people in the pews, and I've gotten good feedback and good experience. And but that's the overall feeling for me, is, you know, it is short term in a lot of ways. It's only a summer. But it's just, I guess, the invitation I have felt is just to, you know, feel free. I feel the freedom to make mistakes, you know, get up there, kind of a grip it and rip it mentality while you have the opportunity,
like,
you
it.
Know, and then just leave it in the hands of God. Do with it what he will. So, overall, it's been a very good experience.
Yep. So in seminary, and I've thought about this and never asked, do you have classes on how to manage budgeting for a church, how to employees, employee relations?
Not as much as you might think. There's some, you know, they're going to give you the skeleton of it, but no, a lot of that is going to come down to, you know, your time with, you know, priests and pastors in your diocese that have the experience, and then especially, you know, once you're, like, next summer, it'll be even more intensive
Me
to be under an experienced pastor somewhere. And then, you know, honestly, what we hear very consistently, and I think, you know, priests that I've been around do very well, is just a reliance on, you know, lay people to do what they're good at as well. You know,
right.
You hear that over and over in class and all different classes, you know. You know, complicated issues they'll kind of talk through case studies on, and then they'll say, but don't freak out when this is on your desk for the first time, you know, call the chancellor of your diocese,
right.
Or call in the, you know, your business manager and say, walk me through this. This is your profession. This is what
right.
you're good at.
Right.
So that reminder, that's always good to, like, step back and remind yourself of.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and hopefully, you know, I think if you do that well, at least the mentality, you know, it allows you to you know, in a few years, I hope it'll allow me to do the things that priests can do, you know, be in the confessional more and stuff like that, and let people that are good at stuff like that do that.
Now, how long on the average is a new priest assigned to a experienced priest before he's given his own parish?
From the guys that I've been around in our diocese, I would say like probably 2 years minimum, yeah. And five years would be.
Oh, that's super.
Yep. And I think it just ranges on what needs filled, the, you know, the personality and the experience of the guy. And there's a lot that goes into it. They're not going to try to throw you in somewhere that you're going to drown in, you know? So it's just a individual basis, but generally it's that 2 to 5 year mark, I think.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, that makes sense then.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, you know what, Mark, we need to take a quick break here, and maybe we can get Deacon Rob to stay over for the break and
do our
give
homily.
Us a preview of the gospel.
All right.
This is the Cradle and the Convert on WDCR, and we'll be right back.
All right.
Each day, the world is blessed by the heroic dedication of holy Catholic priests serving in our parishes and religious orders, in nursing homes and hospitals, and as military chaplains around the world. Since the secular culture is often quick to criticize Catholic priests, it's so important for us to offer our prayers and gratitude for the countless holy Catholic priests who serve humanity with courageous virtue and dedication to Jesus and the gospel. EncouragePriests.org was launched by the Catholic media apostolate CatholicsComeHome.org during the Year for Priests to support our priests and promote vocations. By visiting EncouragePriests.org, you'll be able to help the priests in your life through spiritual bouquets, written or video greetings, and collar-holler e-cards. Let's pray daily for our seminarians, priests, bishops, and our Holy Father who bring us the sacraments and help guide our path to heaven. Thank you for joining us in this apostolic mission of EncouragePriests.org and CatholicsComeHome.org.
All right, welcome back to the Cradle and the Convert for Thursday, July 20th. I'm Dave Slade here with Mark Barthelemy and with Deacon Rob Johnson.
Yeah.
And Deacon Rob is going to give us our preview of this Sunday's gospel. As you know, we like to give you a preview of what you'll hear this Sunday so that you'll have an opportunity to have reflected on it and to listen to Father when he reads it and gives his homily. So Deacon Rob, take it away.
Sure, this is from the 13th chapter of Matthew's gospel. Jesus proposed another parable to the crowds, saying, "The kingdom of heaven may be likened to a man who sowed good seed in his field. While everyone was asleep, his enemy came and sowed weeds all through the wheat, and then went off. When the crop grew and bore fruit, the weeds appeared as well. The slaves of the householder came to him and said, 'Master, did you not sow good seed in your field? Where have the weeds come from?' He answered, An enemy has done this." His slaves said to him, "Do you want us to go and pull them up?" He replied, "No, if you pull up the weeds, you might uproot the wheat along with them. Let them grow together until harvest. Then at harvest time, I will say to the harvesters, 'First collect the weeds and tie them in bundles for burning, but gather the wheat into my barn.'" He proposed another parable to them. "The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed that a person took and sowed in a field. It is the smallest of all the seeds, yet when full grown, it is the largest of plants. It becomes a large bush, and the birds of the sky come and dwell in its branches." He spoke to them another parable. "The kingdom of heaven is like yeast that a woman took and mixed with 3 measures of wheat flour until the whole batch was leavened." All these things Jesus spoke to the crowds in parables. He spoke to them only in parables to fulfill what had been said through the prophet, "I will open my mouth in parables. I will announce what has lain hidden from the foundation of the world." Then, dismissing the crowds, he went into the house. His disciples approached him and said, "Explain to us the parable of the weeds in the field." He said in reply, "He who sows good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world. The good seed, the children of the kingdom. The weeds are the children of the evil one, and the enemy who sows them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, and the harvesters are angels. Just as weeds are collected and burned up with fire, so will it be at the end of the age. The Son of Man will send his angels, and they will collect out of his kingdom all who cause others to sin and all evildoers. They will throw them into the fiery furnace, where there will be wailing and grinding of teeth. Then the righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father. Whoever has ears ought to hear.
It's interesting, isn't it? That's 2 weeks in a row we've talked about the seeds.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Last was the path, sowing on the path, mm-hmm. the rocky soil. Yes, indeed.
So, Deacon, when Jesus is talking to the disciples and to these big crowds, I have to assume our Lord had a wonderful sense of humor, because after he gives this parable to the disciples, they all go in and say, okay, now explain it to us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he probably hits his head and goes, oh boy, you know, these fishermen, they're something else. But, you know, I'm sure that, you know, they needed to understand in more deeply in context of what he was talking about so they could share it after he was gone. But they really didn't get a lot of these parables until he explained it to them again.
Well, hence the homily.
Sure.
In the Mass.
Yeah,
sure. I mean, that's a beautiful just reality to think about, that they would have all been in a house together. You know, you can almost picture it, you know, hanging out around a table or something like that, and knowing Jesus well enough to say, I don't get what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, that's a very cool reality. And one of my favorite quotes about Scripture, I can't remember who it is now, but, you know, Scripture is, when you read it, it's shallow enough for lambs to drink, and it's deep enough for elephants to wade. So even thinking about what Jesus is talking about there, you know, I love that image of the branches and the stuff that is in a sense been thrown out to be bundled together and to be, you know, to be burnt up. And I remember talking about a similar passage one time with a Scripture professor that I had, and her point was, you know, that they would actually in biblical times, people in that area would use that heat for something. You know, and so it's not tossing them out to be, you know, to be damned necessarily.
Right.
But it's saying, you know, if you allow yourself to think about it, and kind of going back to that relation.